Well, when we were all together on Friday morning, there were about six key states in play in the American election: Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Georgia, Alaska, Arizona, and Nevada. Well, fast forward two and a bit days, and here we are with 98% of the vote counted in Pennsylvania. Biden is up by 37,000 votes. The media companies have given that to Biden. There will be legal challenges there. In North Carolina, 98% of the vote is now counted. Here it is. Trump is up by 75,000. I can't see him losing that. In Georgia, 99% of the vote has been counted. Biden leads in Georgia by just 10,000 votes. Again, legal challenge territory. In Alaska, there's been no update, but Trump will win that by a mile. In Arizona, 97% of the vote has now been counted. When we were together on Friday morning, only 86% had been counted. Biden's lead was 68,000. Now that we're nearing the finishing point, Biden is leading by just 19,000. And in Nevada, with 87% of the vote counted on Friday, Biden led by 12,000. Now with 95% counted, his lead is 27,000. It seems that the networks would be right to give it to Biden. So Biden's won the election, notwithstanding the legal challenges. The question now is, what do we make of it all? Well, Brendan O'Neill, the editor of Spiked, based in London, writing so well as he always does about all of this, says that Trump might trail Biden in the popular vote, but he too beat Obama's 2008 record. So he's won the second highest popular vote in the history of the American Republic. Of course, Biden has won the highest. And as he said, that is remarkable. Why? Well, for one simple reason. Trump is the man we're all meant to hate. He's been raged against ceaselessly by the cultural elites for the past 4 years. Hardly any of the American media backed him in 2020. Globalist institutions loathe him, academia, the media elites, the social media oligarchs, the celebrity set, and the hugely influential sectors have branded him a 21st century Hitler and insisted that only a white supremacist could countenance voting for him. And yet, as Brendan O'Neill says, is the worst thing to happen to Western politics in decades, we're told by clever people constantly, and yet around 70 million Americans, almost 71 million now, voted for him. Well, how do we make sense of it? Brendan O'Neill joins me on the line. Brendan, good to talk with you.
Hi, Michael.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, having been belted around by almost everybody, 71 million Americans still come out and vote for him?
It's amazing. I think it's the most important story of the election. And, you know, I don't want to take away from the huge popular vote that Biden got, even though I don't support Biden. And I also don't want to take away from the fact that the turnout was huge, the biggest turnout in 100 years, they think. But even with those things on board, I think the vote for Trump is phenomenal for the simple reason, as you've just outlined there, he was, you know, denounced in a very deranged way for a long time by incredibly influential people. The American public was warned constantly, you can't possibly vote for this man. He is the embodiment of evil. He's just like Hitler, possibly even worse than Hitler. Only a lunatic would vote for him. And yet, almost 71 million people thought to themselves in a very serious, rational way that Donald Trump was a better representative of their interests and their concerns than the establishment figure. And I just find that fascinating and actually quite inspiring that people were able to think for themselves and defy the diktats of the kind of woke elites.
It's interesting, you know, I mean, in America, they're very big now on breaking not just the people into one homogenous group, but breaking it all down into racial groups particularly. And it's interesting to note the increase in support for Trump and the Republicans, or the Republicans under Trump, by Latino voters. Now, these are people that are meant to be, you know, born and bred, locked in the Democrat camp. Well, you know, in some areas, 40% more voted Republican.
That's right. And, you know, one of the great things about this election is precisely that it's a bit of a blow for identity politics, because the identity politics that now comes from the left and from significant sections of the political establishment and the media establishment, this identity politics says that you know, no one is really an individual. No one is really a member of an economic class. You are just a member of an ethnic racial group, and you've got to behave in the way that those members of those groups are expected to behave. So in the United States, Latinos are expected to vote Democrat. Black people are expected to vote Democrat. If any of them fail to do that, they will be denounced as essentially Uncle Toms, you know, turncoats, people who have betrayed their racial group. And what's striking about this election is there seems to have been a big shift among Latinos towards Trump, towards the Republicans. And it seems that among black men, there has been a fairly significant shift as well. And it seems that more black men voted for Trump in 2020 than voted for John McCain and Mitt Romney when they stood for the Republicans over the past few years. So that's very significant and quite heartening that people are refusing to obey the diktats of the identity politics brigade.
Well, because these people have been particularly belted over the head with this idea that Trump's a racist. And so for them to then go in the sanctity of the voting booth and support him is quite a courageous act.
Very courageous. And it increasingly seems that this idea that Trump is a white supremacist and that America is an inescapably racist country, that is an idea that might be quite powerful and influential on campuses and in the coffee shops of Manhattan and in trendy circles on the West Coast of the United States. Among those people, upper middle classes, very, very politically correct, very woke, very socially aware, they are the kind of people who are obsessed with the idea that America is this foul racist country and Trump is a white supremacist along the lines of Hitler. But among ordinary people, vast numbers of ordinary people, including many white people who didn't go to university, many black people who work in industry and manufacturing, and many Latinos, among those groups, they obviously don't believe that. And if you look at the vote among Native Americans and Native Alaskans, it's really interesting. They, in quite large numbers, they voted for Trump as well. So there's a really important divide between the East Coast and the West Coast elites, who will be predominantly white, as it happens, who are obsessed with the problem of racism and the problem of Donald Trump's white supremacy. But among ordinary people, including ordinary people of color, they don't share that obsession and they seem not to believe it. And I think that's quite important.
You wrote recently that many Americans have clearly chosen not to communicate their beliefs to pollsters, which is interesting. I quite agree with you. We're seeing that around the world on a range of issues, but most astutely in America. Now, Kahaly, who runs the Trafalgar poll, and they seem to be almost the most accurate left in America, he refers to social desirability bias. In other words, the pollster calls up, and the person on the other end of the phone is a Trump supporter, but they think, oh, look, you know, this guy probably wants me to say Biden. So, I'll vote for Biden.
Yeah.
So they'll tell a fib because they want to be socially desirable. They don't want to be seen as, you know, the village idiot or something. But then, again, in the privacy of the booth, they go the other way. Now, this is a big problem for pollsters.
It's a big problem for pollsters. I think it's a big problem for politics. Now, part of me thinks it's quite funny that people just don't tell pollsters the truth because they know that those people will judge them. They know that they silently will be judged. If you vote Trump, you're a bad person. And you're right. You know, polling has been called into question across the Western world over the past few years. I mean, if you think back to the absolute shock that greeted the election of Scott Morrison, for example, hardly anyone predicted that. Similar with Brexit in the UK, hardly anyone predicted that. And again, with the shy Trump voters in the US who refused to tell pollsters what they were thinking and how they were going to vote. And all of these things are kind of connected because in these societies, there is a very strong message coming from the kind of cultural elites and the media elites in particular, which is that if you support a certain politician or if you support a certain worldview, you are evil. You are a bad person. You're a dangerous person. And in those circumstances, it's not surprising that people would want to keep their views to themselves. And so I think because of that phenomenon, because of that political intolerance, which demonizes people who hold a particular point of view, that means polling virtually becomes impossible. It's very hard for the political establishment to read the public because the public is turning away and saying, well, we're not going to tell you the truth because we know that you hold us in contempt.
Just before you go, Brendan, you also made the point, and this is important, when you look at education levels, there is a split in America that's only deepened since 2016. As you say, majorities of white men did vote for Trump. But among white men who didn't go to college, 64% voted for Trump. It was less for those that had the degree, but still a majority at 52%. Meanwhile, though, for the women, 60% of white women who didn't go to college voted for Trump, whereas 59% of white women who did go to college, what we would say to university, voted for Biden. Now, this is also part of the story, and you make the point that universities have a lot to answer for here.
Absolutely. And of course, the way in which that's interpreted by certain elitist people is that, you know, well, obviously, if you didn't go to university, you must be stupid. And that's why you vote for Trump. I don't think that's the case at all. I think what this demonstrates is that universities have become places in which people are indoctrinated in some instances into the kind of woke, politically correct way of thinking, you know, critical race theory, cancel culture, the politics of transgenderism, all these various issues are fed to people at universities on a daily basis, essentially, and they come to embrace those views. Whereas people who don't go to university, who might pursue a trade or work with a family business or, you know, get a job, they won't be exposed to those same kinds of ideologies. And I think the great irony of our time, in my view, is that very often it's those who don't go to university who are now most capable of thinking independently and resisting the pressure to conform to the kind of woke ideology that comes from the elites. So that, I think, is one of the most fascinating things about the US election, the way in which it was the non-university educated people who rejected the ideologies that are coming from New York and Washington and California and said, no, we want a different kind of politics. We want to talk about the economy and jobs, and we want to have some influence and some power. And again, that's another thing I find quite positive, the way in which these ordinary people, good people, decent people have not been sucked into the new ideologies and the new orthodoxies and instead are able to think for themselves.
Just before we go, can you explain why there were so many people in the big cities like San Francisco, Atlanta, Washington, Philadelphia, New York that had to vote by post or pre-poll because to queue up on election day would risk catching COVID and dying? And yet, the moment Joe Biden has declared the winner, they're out in their tens of thousands in the streets.
There you go. It really sums it up. I think the COVID thing is another really interesting thing in this election, because what you essentially had in America over the past few months was, you know, upper middle class people staying at home, working from home, scared of the virus, hiding from the world and tweeting about how horrible Donald Trump is. Then you had swarms of ordinary people who were still working, the truck drivers who were delivering things to these people's homes, the people who were still farming food and making food and selling food. And if you look at the breakdown of the vote, the well-off people who stayed at home moaning about the world tended to vote for Biden. The people who carried on working to earn a living tended to vote for Trump. I think that tells us a really interesting story about the splits in politics in the West in the 21st century.
There'll be analysis for years to come. Anyway, we've made a start. Brendan, thank you so much. Really appreciate your insight as always.
Thank you.
Brendan O'Neill there, the editor of Spiked.